Are you ready for a change? Be it physical, mental, or emotional change, you've already got what it takes to make that happen. Your host for the upcoming program, the Matt Newton Power Hour, has trained in martial arts over the course of several decades. Time and time again, his training methods have saved or extended the careers of dozens of NFL, NBA, and Major League Baseball stars. Matt Newton has authored two highly acclaimed books, A Path to Power and The D Factor. The Matt Newton Power Hour starts now. Here's Matt.
Let's do a live radio broadcast. Good afternoon, everybody. And I mean everybody, everywhere. Hey gang, I'm Mac Newton, and this is the Power Hour, coming to you on the very first day of September 2011. And a beautiful September 1st day it is in downtown Phoenix, Arizona. You guys are in for a treat today, as you are every Thursday at 5. But a little extra special today because of our musical guest host. If you haven't been able to guess by now, listening to that signature saxophone of Paul Desmond, it's the Dave Brubeck Quartet. Yes, the one and only Dave Brubeck. We should get a hand for that magic man. Come on, Dave Brubeck. Absolutely. Ah. Yes. Born in 1920. That would make him a young 90 years old and still playing and performing today. My man. I tell you. Hey gang, welcome aboard. As I said, I'm Mac Newton. I'm the host of the Power Hour, and we do it every Thursday from downtown Phoenix, Arizona, and of course behind the glass in his customary chair, making the whole thing happen. Of course, the Magic Man is what we call him.
Thank you, Mac.
You are so welcome. His real name is Zach Geist, and that's with two K's. Don't be confused.
Indeed.
Indeed. And of course, making the whole room brighter, smelling good, looking good, the one and only fabulous Natasha.
Thank you, Mac. Hello, everybody.
She says it just like that every week, so if you're looking for something else, forget about it. Welcome aboard, gang. It's so, we had a great show on tap for you guys today. And we're listening to the Dave Brubeck Quartet. Dave Brubeck, I mean, just you think what we talked about last week with Nancy Wilson was amazing. Well, Dave Brubeck is even more amazing because he's been at it longer. Somewhere around 90 LPs, albums that he's put out in his career so far. That's wow. Like one a year, and his career has been just amazing. His awards, his associations, his contribution to jazz music. He was playing cool jazz before anyone knew it was cool jazz. In fact, there is a style of jazz that is named just for Dave Brubeck. Because for a long time, he played jazz at the, I think it was the Black Hawk restaurant, the Black Hawk nightclub in San Francisco. And since he didn't travel, it was like his home. He played there every night. He and Paul Desmond, after they had formed the Dave Brubeck Quartet in 1951. And so the style of jazz that he played was called West Coast Jazz to this very day. And as you can tell, he's a little different on the piano. And he played around a lot with time signatures. And if you might remember from his release with the album, Let My Mind Work For Me Now. Anyway, he Take Five came out, I think, in 1953, where it was in a 5-4 instead of a traditional 4-4 time signature. It came out with a 5-4. That's why it was called Take Five.
The famous song.
Yes, Take Five, yes. And in fact, he went on to experiment with even more challenging time signatures, like 6-4 and an unbelievable 9-8. Now, you have to be a serious musician to play that. I can't even imagine it. Especially, he even was able to graduate from the Conservatory of Music, now called the University of the Pacific, and he didn't even read music when he graduated. He was able to fake his way all the way through because he was so good. And but by the time they found out, they didn't want to let him graduate because they felt, gee whiz, how can you teach music? If you go on to become we give you a diploma, that means you can teach music. He said, we'll let you graduate, but you got to promise never to teach music.
Looks like it worked out for him.
Oh, it worked out pretty well. Of course, he have gone on to study music on many different levels and different styles of music and playing and with some of the greatest masters from around the world, of which, of course, now anyone is able to sit on a bandstand with Dave Brubeck would consider it a major moment in their career. Our musical guest host on the Power Hour here on the first day of September, where it is a cozy 110 degrees out with some clouds about in the sky, but mostly sun.
So cozy.
Yes, it's very cozy.
In September, 110.
Well, you know what? It's still 100 degrees at 10 o'clock at night, folks, and that here for us Phoenicians, that is our indicator that it was a hot day. And we've had hot days now for the last 2 or 3 weeks. So anyway, it's cozy, toasty for those who really like it warm, like I do.
That's why we have an air-conditioned ballpark.
You got that right, and we do. We close the roof and enjoy ourselves. And by the way, speaking of ballpark, our Diamondbacks are doing great, aren't they?
I've been enjoying it. Oh, yes. That lead there, and this last series this week with the Rockies, the seats are only $5, so take advantage
right?
of that.
Is that right? Is that right? Sir. Upper $5 a seat, huh? Not a bad deal. Okay, gang, there you have it. Dave Brubeck, more coming your way. On our show today, our early segment is going to be, well, I title it, If It Ain't Broke. All right? And, of course, our main topic is continuing on part two with building a positive self-concept. We got a very interesting email that I want to address myself to early on. This is from a listener. His name is Nick. His name is Nick, and he gave me a very, very well-written and very detailed email, quite long, but not wordy. He got right to the point, and he made himself quite clear. Chris, let me answer your email this way. I understand entirely how you feel with the events that you mentioned in your email. But let me say it this way. Lives that are made interesting are made interesting by different experiences, by a variety of different people. It's one of the reasons that sometimes very, very well-to-do families want their kids to go to public school rather than a private school, because they don't want them to suffer the price of privilege, the sense of entitlement or almost withdrawal, where they're only in environments where they feel comfortable. You want to be in an environment where it's challenging and it's all different kinds of people, and it's always not that familiar right away. So don't be intimidated by it. I want you to look for the positives that'll allow you to explore different parts of your personality and allow you to get to know even more different kinds of people. I think in the end, when you look back, you're going to find that it was a very, very rewarding experience. All right? Sorry to keep you guys in the dark on that, but I think it was sort of a a private email, but I wanted to sort of answer it on the air for Nick. Plus, it saved me from sitting at the keyboard and having to type out probably a long-winded answer that would have bored Nick to death. So I think we served each other's needs with the way we handled it. You know, like I said, gang, we got a really great show on tap for you guys today. We're going to have an early segment, If It Ain't Broke. And, of course, our main topic is building a positive self-concept. And speaking of emails, why don't you guys do me a favor? And if you like the show, or tell a friend. And if you have a question, you have a comment, send me an email. Seven, the number seven spelled out, SEVEN at MacNewton.com. And go visit MacNewton.com, the website where we've got all kinds of stuff. And we're getting ready to reopen our store where you can even, you know, go online and buy Newton Fitness t-shirts with some of the sayings that I've been known for saying, things like, you know, show up, be who you are, and do what you do on the back of them.
How to do this, everything.
That's a good one. I got lots of those, too. You'll be able to buy those. The special attitude or everything t-shirts, even ones that the fashionista herself would love wearing around because they're... It's written in
Swarovski crystals.
There you go. Here we go.
I have a few of those. Love them.
Yeah, there you go. So there you have it. So we're going to get ready to open our store so you can buy copies of our book. And thanks for those of you guys who are still sending me emails and telling me how much you're getting from reading a book that I wrote in 1997. In fact, a book that I reread once a year at least so that I can pick up on it. I really do. I reread that book every single year, at least once. All right. You know, let me just go through this thing here for you. You know, in my Taekwondo class right now, I should, without trying to be modest, I've never really been known for being that modest, but I set out to be the best I can be. I'm not really trying to be better than anyone else. I want to be the best I can be, and wherever that lands, then okay. But sometimes, when you seek excellence, it puts you in a position to be recognized for it quite often. In other words, you're going to win a lot. And we do. As a school, we win. As individuals in tournaments, we win. And so the style that I've practiced in Taekwondo since the very beginning, it won't mean very much to most of you, but it's the Chang Ho Korean style of Changmukwan. And it's a modern style influenced by the founder of Taekwondo, General Choi Hung-hee. However, in the 80s, General Choi Hung-hee, along with Grandmaster Park Jing-tae and several other grandmasters, went out to improve the quality of this of that style. And I guess they looked at it as maybe making just one or two small changes. However, it went much further than that. It ended up revamping the entire fundamental approach to this art. It changed it completely. Completely. I mean, even the basic stances, I mean, just being able to make one step into another step, that was changed. The rhythm of the movement, the flow and control of the body was all changed. And it was met with a tremendous amount of resistance until finally they relented and said, well, you don't have to make these changes. You don't have to make these changes. You stay as you are. And at the time, I was not privy to some of those conversations, but in 1992, Grandmaster Park Jung-tae and I established a very close relationship, and since he had been partly responsible for developing this new style, he started showing it to me and our many visits together, and I'd had a lot of success with our older style. It didn't appear old to me. And again, you know how that saying goes, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, right? His style wasn't broken. How was I to even know that this would be better? Well, Grandmaster Park felt it would be better. And he showed it to me, and of course I didn't have enough experience to really evaluate the two at the time. And so, just on that alone, I decided to change. I said, I want to master that system. Now, of course, I've been teaching Taekwondo at a high level for a long time. I didn't teach those changes as they were coming in. I continued to teach I'll refer to as the old style, as I worked and mastered behind the scenes the new sign, the new style called sine wave. And for 17 years, I practiced that style. And I learned every nuance. When Grandmaster Park passed away in 2004, I continued to practice, mastering every single nuance and element until I felt that my performance was even superior and my knowledge was superior than to the old style. And I could say, without the slightest hesitation, this style was superior. It was superior in balance and effectiveness and in power. It was superior in every way. It was faster. It was more accurate. It was simply a better mousetrap. It was better. However, in order for it to be better, you had to master it. You had to master this system. You had to change from something that, to you, was already working well. So having said all that, I wrote this as a note today on Facebook. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Yikes! Oh, man. How in the heck did that become so ingrained in our thinking? Let me get this right. Wait until it's broke before you change? Oh, no. No way. I advocate change before it breaks, because you don't have to be sick, gang, in order to get better. In fact, you should look to get better before you get sick. In fact, when you get better before you get sick, you may not get sick. Make it better before it breaks. Change from boring to interesting. Control change by setting goals. Change from boring to different. Yeah, different. Different people, different places, different things. But for a lot of folks, this is very stressful. I knew how it was when I proposed to change to all of our branches. I said, it's not optional, though. We're going to make these changes. But why, sir? Why? This whole system is working beautifully. We're going to change. Because we're going to be better. We're not going to work. We're not going to wait till it's not working anymore. Until we know for a fact that it is no longer effective. Until change is forced upon us. No. We're going to change while we can control the direction of change. And so often, when we make changes in this fashion, it's like the moment that change is finished is when finally the old thing breaks down. It is now exactly 18 minutes past the hour. This is the Power Hour. I'm Mac Newton. Change from boring to different. As I said, for some, this is stressful. But humans need some stress, especially stress in this area, in the area that causes, well, accepting challenges. This stress that leads to life change, it leads to growth. That stress is a positive stress. There's even a name for it. It's called eustress, E-U-S, eustress. It's a positive change. It's a positive stress. I'm not talking about the kind of stress that leaves you worried and indecisive and bitter and negative in your thinking. No, not at all. A stress that has you thinking, wow, as you approach this challenge, this move that may redefine you as a person. Wow.
Was that E-U-S?
E-U-S, eustress.
Thank you.
Welcome. Humans need this stress. Some, however, some people try to make sure they they never get hurt, or they're never scared, or they're never lonely. And they do that by seeking the security and safety of sameness. Which, by the way, is an illusion anyway, because there is no security. There is only opportunity. That pseudo security of sameness, that pseudo safety of nothing changing. But you control the direction of change by setting goals. By setting goals in the direction of what you want your life to be. And as a result, what you have there, as a result of seeking security as opposed to opportunity, what you have there is basically a lifestyle that has been determined by fear. And primarily where people are living only for material gain. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. You don't have to be sick to get better. Please don't wait till it's broke to fix it, because when you do, you're dead in the water. Now you have to start from dead still. Don't wait until you're dead in the water. All right? You know what? You know what? It is now exactly 23 minutes past the hour, and GA, who just loves sending us a message, and you know what, GA? I love getting them. I think they're awesome, and I love reading them, and oh, by the way, since I'm responding to a few messages here, I'll send out also my mind is going crazy here, to AJ out there in Virginia. You know, AJ, it's amazing. I had exactly the same thought the very first time I saw you. I really did. AJ sent me an email saying, when he first saw me, he says, he thought we looked alike. And you know what, AJ? I mean, I agree.
Was that the AJ?
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Dallas?
Right, yes.
You don't look alike. Sorry to disappoint you guys, but you don't.
Actually, we do favor each other a bit. And I thought the same thing when I first saw you. I thought, no, I'm taller. I'm thicker. But the set of the eyes, the nose. Well, I thought we looked a little bit the same, and it may have been because I really liked his approach to the art. He was fearless. He just went out there and he did the things I asked him to do, and it made me see a lot of myself in him.
Maybe personality wise.
Well, physically too. I saw both of those. So I saw the same thing. But anyway, getting back to GA, what was my point anyway? GA asked me in an email, a message that he sent to me. He says, another great show, thank you. And he asked me, was the singing talk show host named Regis Philbin? No, not actually. We referred to last week, we were talking about Nancy Wilson. I became obsessed with finding out who that was, and I did. At first, I thought it might have been Phil Donahue. You know, they got to say, let's find out. He run off into the audience with his microphone saying, what do you think? And what do you think? No, it wasn't Phil Donahue. No, it wasn't little old fat cherubic Merv Griffin. No, it was not. He was a friendly little sort of guy. It was about the shape of a little watermelon, you know, just a nice little round shape with a little head on top of it. And he would sing, you know, a little voice would come out of that little round, you know, Santa Claus little body there with little arms sticking out the side of it. He was a very friendly guy. I liked watching him. And but no, it wasn't Phil with his white hair. You know, you remember Phil Donahue and that big, you know, bit of hair. And but no, it was Mike Douglas. Not the Michael Douglas that you saw on Wall Street and, you know, married to Catherine Zeta-Jones. No, the Mike Douglas who's the singer and was a talk show host. And that's where I saw Nancy Wilson one of the first times. And she was absolutely amazing. So thanks for your question. And oh yeah, by the way, I should mention, I told a little story of where I talked about where I talked about a young lady who was crossing the street with her child and talking on a cell phone at the same time. And I made a comment, you know, it may have been a little inappropriate, but I stand by it. I said, you know what, I think that I'll master flying an F-16 before she'll master the art of raising that toddler. And I felt that because of the decision making that led her to be in the middle of that street on such a busy intersection, standing in a turn lane with her child in one hand and a cell phone in the other, you know, totally distracted, just nothing but a target. I mean, for her to get run over there would have been the easiest thing to do. There were huge trucks, big delivery trucks, big beer trucks out there. She might have not even been seen. She could have been easily run over. Only God above protected her. So, in fact, so we found out something entirely different about GA. He says, on the other hand, you understand that you understand. How did he phrase this now? Let me see. What did he say? He says, you said that you could figure out how to fly an F-16 before that woman would learn how to raise that toddler. I did say that. He says, I agree with you, and here's why. You see, the difference between you and that mother of that toddler is that the mother believes she can raise that baby on her own. That's why she's out there on the phone and crossing the street at the same time. She's selfish. She's a loner. And she must do everything on her own. She falls victim of not knowing the number one rule of life, which is teamwork. You, on the other hand, understand that you can't fly an F-16 on your own. In fact, it's very interesting that you mention F-16 because I spent 4 years of my life as an F-16 injection seat mechanic. Who knew? Wow.
Crazy.
Isn't that crazy? And the most important lesson I learned in that 4 years is that there's no such thing as a solo mission. A pilot simply cannot fly an F-16 all by themselves. In order to get a single F-16 off the ground, it takes a skilled team of over 200 highly trained professionals working together as a team. Wow. Who knew? GA. Wow. You the man. Thanks for your continue. And we continue to learn. You know, when I listen and I read the emails of the people who write them on this show, I'm reminded of an early show that used to be in black and white on TV back in the day, and it was set in New York. And it was set in New York, and the announcer used to say at the beginning of the show, he says, that was only one life, and out there are many others. And it was always a different story of a regular person every week. And it was, and every person's life is a story. Hey gang, exactly 29 minutes past the hour right now. We're coming to the bottom of the hour, but we've got lots of show on tap for you guys coming up. Finishing up on our top of If It Ain't Broke. And of course, more with our main topic, building a positive self-concept. Coming at you right now, the Dave Brubeck Quartet taking us on break. You guys stay right where you are. I'll be right back. I'm Mac Daddy, making your day better, hopefully.
Hi everyone, this is Zach Geist, also known as the Magic Man. The Power Hour is brought to you by Newton Fitness Online, the same high conditioning and training that Mac Newton provides in his beautiful Central Phoenix, Arizona location is now available to you online, 24 hours a day. It couldn't be easier. Just log on to MacNewton.com and go to Mac's gym. Yep, his gym is online now. Just go and select your fitness level and go to class. Okay, don't put it off. Go to MacNewton.com now, check it out, and get in the best shape of your life.
Hey gang, I'm Mac Newton. I want to give you a little bit of an update on what's going on with our championship level goal setting program. It is taking off like a rocket ship. Now, I realize I don't have a place online where you can order it. However, you can call my office and speak to Lisa, 602-957-6492, and you can reserve your copy of Championship Level Goal Setting, which will give you a 2-CD program along with a workbook. The CDs will guide you through the voice with you and members of your team, either in your office or in family, through the entire Championship Level Goal Setting program. It is amazing. As a matter of fact, pretty soon, Blair and I will be embarking on a tour where we're going to be demonstrating this live and in person. So if you see us coming to your area, be sure and jump on board. The Championship Level Goal Setting Program is now available. We've been talking about it online. You've been hearing about it on Facebook. Now is your chance to get your copy, all right? So call 602-957-6492 and reserve yours right now. Temporarily, copies are limited, so jump in and make sure you are not left behind. Hey gang, welcome back. I'm Mac Newton, this is the Power Hour. We're listening to the terrific music of the Dave Brubeck Quartet. There are a lot of reasons why I love the music of Dave Brubeck. His innovativeness. He's consistently been true to his art. I like everything about him. He's just a very cool guy. He's done one thing and gotten better at it for a long time. He's not afraid to change his style. He's not afraid of what other people say about him. And he was so very criticized, especially for his taking risks with time signature changes.
What do they say? Change is the only constant?
That's it. That's exactly right. He became very well known in the not only did he play at the Blackhawk nightclub in San Francisco for a long, long run, but he also gained a lot of popularity by playing the college campuses all throughout California. In fact, two of my favorite albums that I have is entitled Jazz at Oberlin College from 1953, and Jazz at the College of the Pacific, also from 1953, two of his best albums ever, and he's got a lot of them over 90.
Is this West Coast style you're talking about?
Well, no, not all the time in West Coast style. He usually reserved that for what he did at the Blackhawk nightclub. But when he went out, he played usually just the original compositions of himself and Paul Desmond on saxophone. You know, we say on saxophone because he played soprano, tenor, alto, you know. So he played all the saxophones. But he also played a lot of songs from the Great American Songbook, some which we've featured right here today on the Power Hour. But back in the early 50s, Dave Brubeck was also, I mean, not a very vocal voice for, you know, civil rights, but I remember reading how he canceled several concerts because club owners or nightclub managers resisted the idea of an integrated band on their stage, especially throughout the South. And he even canceled a television appearance when he found that producers intended to keep his drummer, a fellow by the name of Eugene Wright, off camera. Isn't that something? He could be there, but they wouldn't have him on camera. So he canceled the appearance. And so this was his way. I mean, he didn't say anything, he just said, we won't do it. A man of character, a man of integrity, someone that I admire tremendously. Served in the armed forces and Third Army and George Patton's army, as a matter of fact, overseas. I mean, he created some of the very first United States Armed Forces racially integrated bands. In fact, it had a name. It was called the Wolfpack. They were so good. So, some things you maybe did not know about about Dave Brubeck. You may only remember his great, his signature song, Take Five, or Blue Ronda a la Turk, which was set in a 6-4 time signature. Anyway, there's so much more about the man, Dave Brubeck. He's been featured on the cover of Time Magazine, The Man on Cloud Number 7, okay, in 1954. Let me see if I can tell you some of the. I can't find. He's got so many LPs released, but he was so many. The National Medal of Arts of the National Endowment in 1964. Downbeat Hall of Fame 1994. Grammy Lifetime Achievement Award 96. The BBC Jazz Lifetime Achievement Award 2007. And you know what? He is still playing today. Still, if you get a chance,
still with us
at 90 years of age and playing beautiful music. So if you ever get a chance, it would be a tremendous occasion. If you get a chance, go and see Dave Brubeck and Paul Desmond make music. I'm Mac Newton. A little bit more about a legend, a true jazz legend on the Power Hour here, Dave and the Quartet, Dave Brubeck Quartet. Yep, there you go. you know, when you think of Dave Brubeck and the stand that he took, it wasn't so much that he stood up on a soapbox and did a lot of preaching and loud vocalizing about what he believed and what he was going to do. He just did it. And you know what? That brings me to one other point that I wanted to make here in connection with my early segment from the first half hour.
He let his actions speak for him. Like
that's exactly right. That is exactly right. Because I've noticed something about myself as the years have gone by, as I've gotten older. The older I get, it seems that I pay a lot less attention to what other people think and say, especially what they think and say about me. I never try to be as rude as to say I don't care, but I don't pay very much attention to it. I care about the opinions and thoughts of those who know me and care about me and love me and I love. But the others, you know, people are going to say and think whatever people say and think. And I don't pay too much attention to it. Oh, I notice what they do. I notice how they live their lives. But as I said, I pay very little attention to what they say. Great grandma had a rule about that. She would always say, "Boy, what you're doing is making so much noise, I can't hear a word you're saying." And see, when I was growing up with great-grandma, and she caught me doing something, in order to get out of it, I would say anything. I mean anything. And you know what? And I always believed the things I said. If I said I wasn't going to do it anymore, the moment I said it, I meant it. At the time. And I believed it. You could always ask me later. I said, yes, I'm not going to do it anymore. Great-grandma never believed any of that. I believed my own lies, but she never did. See, because she only watched what I did, and I never watched what I did. So all the stuff that I did that was contrary to what I'd said, I was totally oblivious to that. It just went right by me. But she, those
sounds
are the things
like
she said.
Typical child.
I'm sorry?
Sounds like a typical child.
Of course it is. But you know what the sad part is, Natasha? Is that some people who are doing that when they're a child are still doing that as adults.
That's true.
They're still doing that right now. They still haven't got it yet. And you can tell that because people still don't know how they're going to behave under stress. And you want to find out? Follow the great grandma rule. don't worry about what you say. Don't worry about what you intend. Watch what you do under stress. Watch what you do when push comes up real personal to shove. When the rubber is really meeting the road, what do? That's who you are. Like it or not, that's who you are. So, because I think that life validates words, not the other way around. See, a lot of people like to think that what they say validates their lives. Well, I said this. That's what I said, isn't it? Well, that's not what really validates your life. What do you do over time, especially under stress? What do you do? What do you back it up with? What follows? So you're right, Natasha. You're right. That is the typical behavior of a child, and I was a child. But once you are no longer a child, you must give up childish things. You must start thinking and behaving as an adult, accepting responsibility, setting goals, and making change, and controlling the direction of change with your goal setting, and being able to think not as a child, but as an adult. And let your deeds validate your life. And that's entirely how I judge, how I get to know people. And when you watch and see, you look at the life of someone like Dave Brubeck, he doesn't have to say and put in his, I had to search through the internet to find this information out. I do remember, because I was alive during the 60s, I do remember him canceling the television appearance because of that. So I lived through that. And it helps you form an opinion of a person. But he's never come out to stand on soapboxes and like you see so many doing today, drawing attention to themselves, trying to let their words validate them. While what they do might say something altogether different, especially when they do is absolutely nothing. They try to establish a personality or a persona with words alone, empty words, meaningless. But what have you done? What stand have you taken? A life lived, not just defined by the tremendous musical legacy he's lived, but by his contribution to a cause that may never list his name, that you have to know about the man to know that. He doesn't need to draw attention to himself in that way. Well, I'll tell you something, this is one man's respect he has earned for all time. And not because he's mastered the almost unbelievable idea of a 9/8 time signature, which is I can't even imagine this. I know that
like Magic Man musical riddles.
It is truly, it's all Greek to me.
It'd be weird to even listen to, let alone play.
It is. You wonder if it's coming or going. It's, where do you get into that? So not just because of that, but he's truly a man's man. I told you I'd tell you something about him. And I have a poster in my pool room at home that's a poster for the Miles Davis Trio. On the Miles Davis Quintet. Goes back, I can't remember what year, not a date on there, but this must have been an unbelievable event because the poster was featuring an appearance by Miles Davis and it down had the bottom opening Dave Brubeck Quartet. Man, I needed to be there that night. Oh my goodness gracious. Wow. Oh my. That Dave Brubeck was going to open up for Miles Davis. Oh my goodness. Oh boy. And you know what? He has featured so many different things. I know I'm going a little overboard and taking some time, but I'm going to go a little over today. I can tell right now. But Jazz Impressions. You've heard of Jazz Impressions of Charlie Brown. Well, he has a whole album. I'm trying to think of the name of it. Of Charlie Brown music. It's on there. Let me see here, Magic Man. I can get that here real for us, real fast here. There we go. Quiet as the Moon. Quiet as the Moon. I'm going to just kick that up here for us, and just check this, and you'll hear it out. Here we go, right there. I'm kicking it on right now, there, Magic Man. Go ahead, turn it up for him. Little Linus and Lucy, Quiet as the Moon, Dave Brubeck, Paul Desmond. Yeah. He would have jazz impressions of Japan, jazz impressions of New York. Those both came out in 1964. Yeah. Wow.
When did this Charlie Brown one come out? You said in the 90s?
This was, oh, yes. And he really, in 1963, he came out with a whole album of different, and it was simply called Time Changes. Wow. Yes. Jazz Impressions of Eurasia, an album I do not have, by the way. Anyway, Jazz Goes to Junior College. Dave Brubeck has done the whole thing. That is Paul Desmond on flute as well, by the way. Okay, gang, let's get back to our show. Just something to give you a little something. Now you can run out and add Dave Brubeck to your collection. G.A., you becoming a jazz man, aren't you? Go ahead. You got something to put in there besides some of that George Strait, don't you? Come on. You know? One does not live by George Strait alone. Got to get a little Dave Brubeck in there. Right? Okay. And also, one day we'll feature the music of Paul Desmond. Okay? All right, here you go. Okay, let's get into. We've got about 20 minutes right now, and I think that's what I'll need to bring about a major difference in your life by getting back to the seven steps, the seven ingredients required for happiness, the seven ingredients for success. Now, I wanted to continue on a little bit, and I wanted to pick up from where I left off last week. Before we get to number two, I finished up last week by saying that, talking about peace of mind being our internal gyroscope. Do you recall that, Magic Man?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, peace of mind being our internal gyroscope. Now, for those of you, Natasha didn't know what a gyroscope was, and I explained that a gyroscope is a little spinning wheel that spins horizontally, intersected by a pole. And when it's spun on that pole, you can put it on a string, you know, a tabletop, and it'll just spin there endlessly. And even if you tilt the table, the gyroscope will remain level. That wheel will remain level. It's an amazing phenomenon, and it's very useful in airplanes and things like that, because it always gives you the horizon. You know when you're level. So a gyroscope gives you a level, tells you when you're level. Well, to me, peace of mind is my internal gyroscope. It tells me when I'm doing okay. It's essential for optimum performance. I think that we feel good about ourselves when we are living in harmony. And whenever we go against our inner guidance, or whenever we compromise our internal gyroscope, the first thing to suffer is your peace of mind. In other words, now you have suffering with anger, fear, and guilt, doubt, resentment, and worry. Anger, fear, and guilt, doubt, resentment, and worry. Anger, fear, and guilt. And the thing of it is, we can't really separate those three. They're entities to themselves, but they are a whole. I was angry. I became doubtful. I was fearful, and I was worrying. I felt guilty, and I was resentful. These things are all working together. And one day, I'm going to tell you how to deal with all of these things. And the name of them are, they are destructive negative emotions. I'm going to tell you how to deal with all of them. Now, I think the word last things out of my mouth last week was, I was talking about how the wonderful thing about peace of mind is that it's your natural, normal condition. I mean, Happiness is our birthright. People don't think that we should be happy, that happiness is our birthright, that it belongs to us. Sometimes people think that, you know, what if we get any happiness out of this life? We've just gotten lucky. In fact, those two phrases right there at one point in my life caused me a great deal of confusion. I mean, this idea of achieving happiness, aiming at happiness for my own, I mean, it was a great deal of confusion, because at one point, I was living in a foster home that was a very religious family. Now, I'm as spiritual as the next, but this family had a very unique and different approach to religion. And they were trying to drum into me the idea that my own personal happiness was not really a valid consideration for my choices. And this was really different, because great-grandma always taught me that I'm only successful as a person to the degree which I can achieve my own happiness. That's why all these steps were made, is so I could be responsible for my own happiness. And they were trying to drum into me. I was told that happiness was merely a byproduct of living my entire life of making others happy. Well, you know, on one level, that kind of made sense to me. But I couldn't ever reconcile that. It was too juxtaposed to what Great Grandma taught me. And Great Grandma was very, very spiritual, not very religious, but extremely spiritual, and read and studied the Bible. And then we would spend hours talking about it in real life terms, the teaching of the Bible, that is, how it related to our lives. And now I'm being told that if I got any happiness, then I would just been lucky. And if I didn't, then that was my lot in life, and I should just be happy for that. The very idea of setting happiness as a specific goal for myself, well, then I'm being selfish. I'm uncaring. Well, it was hard for me to get these two things, my head wrapped around it, for a long, long time. A major turning point came for myself later in life when I learned two things. Number one, I learned that if I didn't commit to achieving my own happiness, no one else would. I mean, if my aim in life was only to make others happy, then I would always be at the mercy of the feelings of others. I mean, whatever and whoever they may be. And I found out that trying to organize my life around making others happy was just a never-ending exercise in futility. Just constant frustration. You know why? Because it's just not possible. You can't make others, people, happy. Secondly, I discovered that I couldn't give away something that I didn't have myself. You can only give away anything that you have a surplus of. And for the vast majority of my young adult life, the only thing I had surplus of was misery. That's about it. I can share misery with you. Interested in some? I got a few I got a few gallon buckets I can throw your way. But I didn't have a surplus of joy. I didn't have a surplus of happiness. I didn't have a surplus of compassion, so I couldn't share any of that with you, because I didn't have any of it. I can't share my happiness with you. I had none of that either. If I'm going to share it with you, I have to have some for myself right now. Before I can share anything with my audience, I must have that myself. So the building of my own personal happiness was a nobly selfish act. If I'm going to say that I was selfish, then it was nobly selfish, because now I'm building something that I can now share. I wasn't uncaring. I was extremely caring. And I can demonstrate that now. All right. You can't make someone else happy by being miserable yourself. I found that I couldn't make others happy unless I could make myself happy first. And peace of mind is so important to everything else that you accomplish that it must be analyzed. So, in the simplest terms, let's just sort of summarize our thoughts on peace of mind. In the simplest terms, you experience happiness and peace of mind whenever you are completely free from the destructive emotions of, tell me fast, magic man, real fast, too slow, tell me, day bomb, don't look at the, tell me right away.
Anger, fear and guilt, doubt, resentment, and
worry,
thank you.
Anger, fear and guilt, doubt, resentment, and worry, I want you to know those. I'm not a big person into memorization. I think it corrupts your mind. You don't learn by just memorizing. It corrupts your mind and your whole way you learn. You have to learn actively by experiencing, being reinforced, by being repeated. Repetition and reinforcement creates active learning. Far better than a memorization. Musicians don't really memorize music. They actively learn it. Because what? They do. What do? Magic man, they rehearse. Is that correct?
Yeah, you get the muscle memory.
Right. And you don't have to think about it. They simply do it over and over. It's active. It's like your kids will sit around and watch the Lion King 142 times a day for 6 months. End upon end. Every time they finish, they say, can I watch it again? And you think, if I have to hear that theme song one more time, I'm going to slit my throat. One more time, if I have to listen to that song. But no, you're a good mom, and you say, of course, dear. Yes. And they plop down in front of the TV, eyes wide, as if they've never seen it before. Everything a big surprise. Yes!
And yes. Then they know every line, they
every
sing it along.
Every single line, every nuance, everything, because they're just sitting there with their eyes wide open. They're not trying to memorize it. They're just actively learning it. But then they go to school, and they're told, don't you dare color outside of the lines. I want you to memorize all of this. And all of that natural creativity and spontaneity disappears. But that's another story for another day, all right? Let's stay with the one we have here. Okay. See, I believe in coloring outside of the lines. I believe in leaving my train of thought for a moment. I believe in going somewhere else and then coming back and picking it up. I believe in doing that. It creates an interesting storyline, quite frankly. And quite frankly, sometimes when I leave it, we find something more interesting than what I was even dealing with. But let's come back. As I said, in the simplest terms, you experience happiness and peace of mind whenever you are completely free from the destructive negative emotions, anger, fear, and guilt, doubt, resentment, and worry. In the absence of these, you enjoy peace of mind naturally without any effort. And the key to happiness then is for you to systematically eliminate or at least minimize the parts of your life that cause you negativity or stress of any kind. And when I first learned of that idea years ago, it just knocked me over. Literally almost knocked me down. I thought, imagine, can it be that simple? You mean the way to live a happy, productive life is to achieve your own peace of mind by systematically eliminating the negative people, situations, and emotions that make you unhappy? Wow. Could happiness in life be that simple? And I have been accused in the past of oversimplifying it, but can it really be that simple? It is. But here is the problem. There is one rub, the major obstacle to us eliminating this negativity that interferes with our peace of mind. Is our attachment to the negative situations and the negative people that cause it. And this is what happens. This is how it works. You see, your rational mind, this 4-pound brain that we're in the possession of, with between 30 and 40 billion cells, that has this amazing computing and calculating power, now it comes up with all kinds of very clever reasons why you must continue on in this existing situation. Instead of working for you and providing you with solutions, your amazing brain works frantically to keep you mired just where you are. Bam! And that takes us right back to our early segment, where we talk about change. So we've got to break this chain, this thought process that has got us mired in continuing to make the same mistakes over and over again. All right. Well, later on in this program, I'm going to show you a variety of ways to control and eventually eliminate all these negative emotions, okay? I'm going to show you very powerful techniques that you can use to neutralize anger and to just blow away worry. But for the moment, though, your job is to engage in what I call mountaintop thinking. In other words, you're going to project forward in thought and imagine the ideal life, and then imagine what combination of ingredients would have to exist for you to have peace of mind. Don't worry about what's possible. Don't worry about what's possible or not possible. Just free your mind from all limitations and be perfectly selfish. Okay? That's it for now. Now, when you set peace of mind as your goal, and you plan everything you do in terms of whether it helps or hinders your attainment of that goal, you will probably never make another mistake. You'll do and say the right things at the right time. You'll just find yourself operating from a higher set of principles and values. And people in the world will look at you differently, and you'll feel wonderful about yourself. Peace of mind will now be part of your world. Okay, we want to start you thinking about number two. We want to start you thinking about that. Okay, gang, it is now 5 minutes before the hour. We're going to go a little bit past today, not much, just a little bit, just to catch up for doing the extra work that we did on Dave Brubeck earlier, but gee whiz, I can't think that was wasted time. What about you? What about you, Natasha? Did you like that Dave Brubeck?
I loved it.
Oh, yeah.
I loved it.
You know?
I would like to go to the concert.
Well, you know what? I didn't say that we had one, but if we find one around town with Dave around nearby, I mean, even if it's within a 5-hour drive, we'll go.
All right? That sounds good.
We'll all go. We'll just pile into... No, we're going to stay out of your vehicle there, A-Bomb. No, we're going to stay out of that.
Stay out of her vehicle?
But, exactly. We will pile into something, and we'll go and see Dave. I tell you what, you know, normally you hear me say, oh, I've seen that person in concert many times. I've never seen Dave Brubeck in concert live, and I would love to.
That's bucket list worthy.
That is definitely a list for the bucket list right there, and we know that he is still doing it. And you know what? As I look at his picture here from earlier this year at the Blue Note Jazz Club, he looks pretty good. And he's still playing. So, and that just goes again to show that when you're involved in a passion of yours and you're doing things that's your purpose in life, stuff that you were born to do, I don't know, it seems to keep you younger. So, Anyway, let's just spend a couple of minutes here getting you into the second ingredient for success and happiness. Because, you know, we're talking about how to our overall topic here is how to build a positive self-concept. In other words, to answer the question, why are some people more successful than others? Well, we know the answer. They know the rules. All right. Now, how to build a positive self-concept. What's a positive self-concept? Well, it's these three words in action. I like myself. A positive self-concept is I like myself in action. Okay? That's what it is. So how do you build that concept? Well, that's what we're talking about. And we're now on number two of our start. All right. Just as peace of mind is your normal and natural mental state, having a healthy and energetic body is your normal and very natural physical state. You know what I think? If you get out of the way and we stop doing some of the things we do on a regular basis, we will find that our body has a natural bias toward health. It wants to be. In other words, it is prejudiced toward health. It's not prejudiced toward disease. Those things are caused by the things that we do. Our body has a natural bias toward health. So if we will just simply stop doing certain things and maybe do a few other simple things, your body will naturally and without very much effort become healthy, right? I mean, I think your body under its basic, normal circumstances produces energy easily and in abundance. People look at me all the time and they say, you just never stop. You just never stop moving. In the absence of mental or physical interference, your body is going to naturally produce energy in abundance and radiant health, health that just radiates from your body like sunlight. In the absence of any pain or illness or disease. And wonderfully enough, here's something I found out years and years ago, and I've been living my life on this premise ever since. Your body is constructed in such a way that if you just stop doing certain things to it, often, whatever it is afflicted with, it is going to recover and become healthy and energetic all by itself. So whenever I found out there was something that didn't work, something that was painful or destructive to my body, I stopped doing it. Sometimes I'm driving to work and I see people who are 40, 50, 100 pounds overweight out there trying to run on the streets. I feel like rolling my window down and going, stop it! Stop it! Put on a shirt and stop! That's not the kind of thing that's going to get your body healthy. If you achieve all kinds of things in the material world, but you lose your health and your peace of mind, you get little or no pleasure from your accomplishments. So number two is, in effect, health and a high level of energy. That's what it is. Health and a high level of energy. If we don't have our health or a high level of energy, we don't get very much satisfaction out of life. Okay? We just don't. All right? I want you to imagine yourself enjoying perfect health. Think of how you would be if you were your ideal of physical fitness. What would you look like? What would your body look like? I mean, how would you feel? How much would you weigh? What sort of foods would you eat? And what kind of exercises would you do? What would you be doing more of or less of? A lot of people never think in those terms, that they can use their mind to actually design their body. Well, I think of it all the time. And I may weigh myself in once every 6 months or so and get a printout here. But if I take all of them out from underneath my desk, I'm going to weigh within 1 or 2 pounds of the same thing. I weigh between 187 and 189. Doesn't matter if I weigh in the morning, afternoon, night, evening. It doesn't matter. And I have somewhere around, well, if I told you what it was, you wouldn't believe it anyway, but my body fat is appropriate for an exercise professional. Somewhere around.
You have no body fat.
I have body fat. It's a teeny bit. But these are things that you have to, you visualize and you see. So I'm asking you, what would you look like if you enjoyed perfect health? Not what you're willing to settle for. See, most people have an image of themselves as what they will settle for. I'll take this. Oh, I'll be happy with that. I know I need to lose 60 pounds, but I'll be thrilled with 20. See, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about, what are the key words there? Your ideal image of physical fitness. What would you look like? A businessman, I remember, a businessman came to one of my seminars, and he came up to me after he thought about this ideal image I talked about during my seminar. And he told me that if he were in perfect health, he would be able to run a marathon, 26 miles. Well, I mean, I thought, first of all, that wouldn't have been my first choice, but what the heck? It's his idea of perfect health. So he'd be a marathon. His problem, though, that he was 40 years old, and he was about 30 pounds overweight. Well, gee whiz, to me, 40 years of age, you're just rounding into your... into the prime of life. I mean, it blows my mind when someone says, "Well, I feel old. How old are you?" I'm 40. Are you serious? When I was 42, I had an artificial hip. I was the second fastest from home plate to first base on the whole Oakland A's team with an artificial hip. The only one faster was Ricky Henderson. Are you serious? You're going to tell me you feel old and you're 40? What's going to happen when you're 66? Oh, I forget. You're not planning that far out, are you? You got to plan on getting there and what you're going to look like when you get there. So anyway, let's get back to this guy. His problem was he was 40 years old and 30 pounds overweight and not very fit. He doubted that it was possible for him, but at least he started thinking about it. So the thought process has started, it gotten started. The more he thought about himself as he could be rather than as he was, the more excited he became, and more we talked, I could see him just getting excited about the very idea of training for a marathon. You know, he began to see himself as lean and fit just in our conversation. And he became more and more convinced he could do it. Well, anyway, as a lot of people do, he stayed in contact with me. I get people let me know how they're doing. And, well, I know that he bought a couple of books on jogging and started running a little bit every day. Got running shoes, shorts, increased his distance each week, and soon began doing some fun runs and mini marathons. And within a year, he ran his first marathon, 26.4 miles. And I mean, you would think I ran it for him. He was so thankful to me. He had fulfilled his vision and became the person he had imagined he could be. But most importantly, he was healthier. He was fitter. He was stronger and more energetic than he'd ever been, as I recall him saying, in his entire adult life. Okay, so we've done number one and number two now. Peace of mind, the seven ingredients that we need for happiness. This is one of the American standards, right? Yes, it is. And the name of that is
Fine Romance.
I mean, if you watch movies with Fred Astaire, you're going to hear all these American standards. We'll pick it up with number three next week. Well, gang, I told you we had a great show on trap for you guys today, and I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. And the folks in studio here were taking notes a mile a minute. Everybody was writing them down. I want to remind you guys to be good to yourselves, okay? Save your best behavior for those you love. You know, great grandma used to always say to me, you know, you don't save your best behavior for strangers, boy. You save your best behavior for those who love you and take care of you. She's right. No doubt about that. Be true to yourselves. Make sure as you watch what you do under pressure that it matches your words. That your words and your behaviors match. It equals integrity. Thoughts and actions matching equals integrity. And don't we all want to have integrity? Of course we do. Right. I want to close also by thanking all those ones that have contributed to the success of me as a person. And the list is far longer than just the ones I've been naming here. Of course, Bob Adlock for the Power Hour. But, you know, my great-grandma who raised her daughter, her daughter's daughter, and her daughter's daughter's son, who is me. Well, I can't thank her enough. I didn't always feel that way because she believed really in the application of tough love. She always wanted to prepare me for a real life. Not one where I was going to be treated with kid gloves. She knew that I would be challenged as if she had seen the future. And she put a lot of things there that have served me well. So sometimes I feel that saying thank you is not enough for my feelings for her. But I'll say it anyway. Thanks, Great Grandma. And thanks to so many others who make life for all of us what it is. Take time once in a while to say thanks. Magic Man, great job, man. Do a good job. Appreciate you.
Thank you, sir.
And the fabulous Natasha, you make the whole room feel better, darling. You know that, right?
Thank
Is
you.
That a new top, by the way, there?
Yes, it's new.
Does it have a name or something?
I don't think so. I didn't read any. It's from Nordstrom.
It's just a new top, I tell you. Are you going shopping after the show today?
Absolutely.
And of course, A-Bomb now, whose presence in the studio we've gotten used to, her taking notes about there. Did you learn something today, darling?
Absolutely.
Give me an idea of something you picked up on today.
I always like make your actions and your words match.
Yeah, you think that's a good thing?
It just goes in my head all the time.
All right. Well, gang, this is a fine romance. Thanks for all you guys, and thanks for you guys for listening. Tell all your friends. Peace. 3, 2, 1. The Mac Daddy is...